It's time for the fastest 15 minutes in the news. This is Dory's Fastest 15.
Boom, yeah, it's Fastest 15, Dory Monson Show. Todd Herman filling in because my friend asked me to. And Dory's recovering from knee replacement surgeries and a lot of pain. It's an honor to fill in on a show that's been number one for 25 years, top of the game for all this time. Just a quick comment. Heather Bosch brought us the breaking news. By the way, the Car Radio Newsroom, at times of breaking news, I wish you could watch what they do. It's the very, very best of it. When news is breaking and they are just sprinting about to bring you the updates. That's been some of the most inspiring time I've spent in radio watching that. Quickly before we get to the Fastest 15, Heather was just telling you that the state Supreme Court, which I euphemistically call the Seattle Supreme Court, has ruled in favor of Sound Transit in terms of the illegal car tab scheme. This is very predictable. I think Dory probably predicted the same thing. In fact, I think I know he did. This means, quite frankly, that what is written into the law about how laws have to be written, if you're making a change to a law, the legislature and legislators are supposed to not have to go look for what you're adding. It's supposed to be in there. Okay? It wasn't. Sound Transit knew it wasn't. They didn't want it in there. Democratic legislators, in fact, said, we weren't able to find this. We didn't know this was the schedule. And that's why the law is written, so it's supposed to be in there. Secondly, the schedule that Sound Transit used was negated. It was struck down twice by you. That is, through your lawmakers, you struck it down. So once again, what the Supreme Court has said in Washington State is, look, let's be clear. We want what we want when we want it, and we want it now. That's it. It's a political move, and it's pretty predictable for the Supreme Court. Let's get started with the Fastest 15. Jeff Bezos is purchasing a $165 million home. To those of us who are regular human beings, look at this, the $165 million. The guy's worth $50 billion. What's he care? He wrote a quick check for this. But this has now become fodder for Shama Sawant, and she's smart to do this, saying he's got a $165 million home, but he doesn't want to pay taxes for your home or for people to have affordable housing. And I would just say this. Jeff Bezos earned that money. People give him money voluntarily. Maybe they shouldn't. Maybe they shouldn't give him so much money, but they do. Let's just take your theory, Shama Sawant, that since he can afford this house, he should then pay for other people to live in houses, right? That's the theory. If that's the case, with record revenues at the Washington state level, then they should be able to give some money back to us, right? And for you, Shama Sawant, with the money that this city has and the city continues to draw in, you should show some progress at housing people. But you don't, and you won't, because that's not the name of the game. Next up in the Fastest 15, CenturyLink Field is going to go cashless. Yeah, it's convenient. Yes, I guess pulling out the app to pay for something is convenient. Does anyone see a possible downside of this? As someone said in the last segment on the text line at 98973 that I'm anal retentive because there's things that I don't like. I just have one worry about great big organizations like CenturyLink Fields and the XFL going cashless. Nicole, Sean, do you guys have any reservations at all about big companies going to cashless mode? Does it concern you in any way? Can you see any downside to this?
I can't. I mean, it just doesn't affect me, but I can understand how it might affect someone else, but it doesn't affect me.
So you can't look down the road and see anything that might, if this becomes the standard, the way things are done, you can't see any downside to a cashless society at all?
Well, I mean, I would have to think about what the downside would be, but I think in the long term, I like it because then I keep track of how I spend, where I spend, all of that is all kept track for me.
Nicole, the downside is you are being followed by the man,
I know,
the woman, which, the person.
To
like,
me, it's
they're
not,
gonna get you.
I don't have anything to hide. I'm boring. They're not gonna find me anymore.
No, no. Sean's almost there. Sean, it's a little bit more exact. It's this. That if it's a cashless society, you never have the capability to own the source that you use to exchange goods and services. You never get to own, have in your possession that which you use to barter, because it is not real. It's stored in a computer, and the government could come along and say, we need some of that and take it from you. We're going to go ahead and freeze that. Just look at China. Just look over there with the social credit stores, et cetera. If you're not sufficiently, you know, praiseworthy or praising the government, yeah, you can't get a job. You can't travel. And obviously, that can't happen here. America would never go that far. No politician would ever want that much power. Right, Sean?
Exactly. I don't know. Understand why they would. Power is useless. Power is absolutely useless.
You should start a quip service where you just quip for people. You're very, very good at that. Next up in the big lead, the King County Council members have taken a step. This is from the Seattle Times. And who is it? Oh, Heidi Groover. Heidi Groover wrote this, the Seattle Times. I want to read this article to you. Not the article. I want to read the first paragraph. And I want you to just assess if you are listening to news or opinion. Okay, I'm going to read it. Ready? King County Council members took a step towards free transit passes to some riders with low incomes Wednesday, an acknowledgement that even Metro's often celebrated discount bus fares remain out of reach for some in a region grappling with homelessness and income inequality. So to go back through that, did you hear anything in this news story that could be thought of as opinion? And I'm not trying to go after Heidi Groover or Seattle Times. I go after the media all the time. That's not my intent here. My intent here is to talk to them, to say, I know you guys don't like the fact that trust in media is going down, and it's been precipitously going down. And I think that's a problem. I happen to think that a free society, a democratic republic, I kind of think we need a potent, powerful, skeptical, independent press that isn't beholden to anybody. And I think we need it to be trusted. Because if the press is not trusted, if the media is not trusted, other sources will rise up. Now, I'm a big fan of citizen journalism. I am. I sort of consider myself, I'm not a journalist, but a citizen media member. Let's go back through this. King County Council members took a step toward offering free transit passes. No, they didn't. King County Council members took a step towards having taxpayers subsidize bus rides. One is factual, one is not. Mine is factual. These are not free. So let's fix the article. King County Council members took a step toward offering tax-supported transit passes for riders with low incomes. Okay. Secondly, it's not the King County Council members who are offering it. They are voting to do it with your money. Okay, let's just get that out in front. Then there's this, the often celebrated discount. Okay, perhaps it is often celebrated. What is the scientific measure of often? So she's saying it's often celebrated, probably because her friends often celebrate it. Lastly is this, is a region grappling with homelessness and income inequality. So the inherent thought here is, by Heidi Groover in the Seattle Times, that people cannot afford bus passes because you can. Because you can afford a bus pass, they can't. This is the zero-sum game where there's one piece, you know, there's one pie. We can't create more pies. And the rich people all have all the pie, and the poor people don't have it because the rich people have taken it. I would just say to the Seattle Times that if you want to be trusted, be trustworthy. Don't do things that you present as news that are not actually news, that they're opinion. Because people are smart enough to figure out that what you're offering is opinion and not news. Next up in the Fastest 15. All right, this was a study done with, speaking of income inequality, it's a University of Washington study, and it shows that hungry babies, by nature, want to give, they want to share. So they took a test. Little kids, little babies, they're hungry. You give them food, they want to hand it to other people. And they're construing this to mean that kids are naturally wanting to give. And I think that might be true. But I also wonder, is it possible that the kids just say, is this safe to eat? Is this like some sort of protection mechanism where I'm not eating this until you take a bite of it, right? But if it is that kids are naturally giving and that's what they are, then do we become less naturally giving? Do we become less giving as a society? Nicole, Sean, do you think that society as a whole has become less philanthropic, less giving? Do you think that's the state of things?
Well, I think people still have compassion. I would like to think people still are compassionate. But as far as what you, I think you're taught that the more you have, the more successful you are, the more you're valued. And so you start to just keep things for yourself. I think that is a taught thing.
So you think it's a taught thing to keep things for yourself? You don't think it's an instinctual thing? Because I think that there might be some instinct in play this.
Well, I think it starts at, like, the study. I think that our instinct is to give, but it changes as we learn that the more we have, the more we're thought of as, you know, like I said, successful or rich in things.
All right. Sean, what's your assessment? Has society become less giving?
No, I agree with what Nicole said. I think that this kind of just proves a little bit that we are sort of instinctually led to compassion, maybe, or to just like, here, have some sharing, you know? And that, yeah, as we grow, we sort of learn about society and we choose to maybe keep that sort of thing within us, and we volunteer and we give and we do all that stuff. And then other people go to jail.
And then at the same time, you know,
I'm just saying, like, so we learn and we grow, and some people change, and some people sort of stick with that instinctual sort of learned thing.
Well, then I also think we learn to want more as well, and so there's the people that take advantage because they want more, and then it gets all messy.
And there's where jail comes in, when you take advantage,
right?
You know, and then you get put away,
or you know, people
always
that
leads
want
to
more
jail.
Other people's money.
Leads to jail in Sean's universe. There was a great bit of writing from C.S. Lewis. So C.S. Lewis, you know, from The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, and that whole series turned into the movies. He was an atheist until he got together with J.R. Tolkien, who wrote The Lord of the Rings. And Tolkien was a Christian and a Catholic, and he converted C.S. Lewis first to being a non-atheist, and then to being a deist, and then eventually to being a Christian. One of the things that C.S. Lewis wrote in defense of spirituality, in defense of belief in God, is he said that there are things within us that belie us just being biological machines, or us just being deterministic, or, you know, completely driven, let's say, by Darwinistic type evolution. And he gave this example. If you walk by a home and that home is on fire, and you then hear a baby crying from in the home, you may be very, very likely to say, oh my gosh, there's a baby in there. We have to go get the baby. We got to rescue the baby. So you, an adult, able to hunt for the tribe, able to gather for the tribe, able to protect the tribe, you put your life, which is a productive life at that point, at risk to go save a, at that point, non-productive life. Now, I'm not saying that babies aren't precious. They are, but they're not productive. And Lewis argues that that goes against evolutionary biology, in that you are just now, you're putting your existence at risk. Okay, maybe it's propagating the race. Maybe it's propagating the species, etc. But he says that something pulls at the heartstrings. So I do think they were sort of, you know, designed to give. All right, from Christianity to a sect of Christianity, and that is the LDS faith. And I should just make clear, Cairo Radio is owned by Bonneville Communications, which is owned by the Mormon Church. By the way, they're great owners. Never once have I been told what to say on the air, and I don't think that will ever happen because the church happens to be really just great media owners. Very hands-off. The state of Utah, a Senate committee has unanimously approved the bill to decriminalize polygamy. So one man, multiple wives. I guess it could go the other way. I guess you could be a woman and have multiple husbands, although that's not traditionally the way it's done in Utah. Having spent some time in polygamous communities, not hanging out, time, I mean driving through, talking to a person occasionally, observing sort of from afar, Colorado City, etc. I will say, with all my bias, with all my human failings, that I find it weird. And it was not uncommon over the last year or so for us to run into polygamous people, because in southern Utah, polygamous people dress a certain way. It is part of their faith. So you know when you are talking to or you're in line with a polygamist. And I will fully admit to you, I've looked at the women and I've thought, why? Why are you doing this? And there are some polygamous communities down there which were horrific. They were cults. They were, I think his name is Warren Jeffs. He wanted to control who married who. He was making sure that older men could have sex with young girls. It was truly, truly frightening and disgusting. He's in jail. But about polygamy, right? Do you think that this ever should have been criminalized? Where do you stand in this, Nicole, in terms of the decriminalization? Or at least it looks like it's going to be decriminalized in the state of Utah. Yeah. Where do you stand on it?
I'm not for it. I don't get it. I actually have friends that are, they're a little out of the box. And one of my friends has two men in her life, and it works very well for them. I don't get it.
Okay.
I don't get how you shut off jealousy.
I'm not asking.
I don't get how you, I don't get that.
Okay, but I'm not asking if you get it. I don't think I get it either.
So
I'm asking
legally,
you if it should be, okay, should it be decriminalized? Should it be illegal for one man to be married to multiple women?
Oh gosh. I would probably say it's not my highest concern. I think people can live how they want to live. As long as it's
I know
you're gonna
hold it. You've listened to too many politicians. You've listened to too many politicians.
No, I've talked to my friend. She is a happier person because of the way they live. And she claims it was the only way they would have stayed married.
I have friends in similar circumstances. Do you think it should be illegal or legal for one man to marry multiple women?
I'm okay with illegal there. Okay, I just don't know that you need to be in jail, or I just don't know what that. I don't think it should be something that we do. I don't know that it is cause for.
I mean, if there's no illegalities happening, then I think that's great. You know, if you've got a dude and underage women, girls, that's not right at all.
Right. Right.
So marry who you want or date who you want. Have a big old orgy. As long as everyone's on the same page and there's no illegalities, I don't think that polygamy, it should be allowed if everything's above board.
Yeah. Okay. So it's interesting to hear the evolution of views on this. And I know that Dory talked about this, I think it was last week, about this young kid has Down syndrome, and this is at a school, I can't even say the name, Treddy Riffrin Easttown School District against Pennsylvania. So a six-year-old kid makes a gun shape with her finger. She has Down syndrome, and they call 911. This just reminded me of something that my wife ran into when she was a teacher. There was a little boy who constantly made machine gun noises. And today, they'd call 911. My wife actually asked him about those noises, and he drew a picture. And he drew pictures of guys with machine guns shooting at people. And it turned out that he came from a very, very war-torn portion of the Middle East, that he had seen these things. And in fact, what was really spooky for my wife was that this little boy who was in kindergarten could perfectly mimic the sound of a machine gun. She took the opportunity to learn from him and from his parents about what that was like. And today, probably just call 911. Get his name on the record. It's Todd Herman filling in for Dory Monson on Cairo Radio. Todd Herman in for my friend Dory Monson on Cairo Radio. Dory continues to recover from knee replacement surgery, and we continue to pray this recovery goes smoothly. It's going smoothly, as far as we know. It's just very, very painful. Or trust me, he was on the show from the hospital bed. You got to go to mynorthwest.com and see the picture of Dory and his buddy Brock Heward as Dory was getting ready to broadcast from his hospital bed. We legitimately heard the EKG in the background. So Dory's been spending a lot of time on, I've been spending a lot of time on the so-called comprehensive sex education bills that are in Olympia. One is going to come out of the Senate in all likelihood and head to the House. It is not the bill, the text of the bill, that is the issue. The text of the bill is milquetoast, and it's meant to be milquetoast, because the devil in the bill is the actual curriculum that will be suggested and pushed and eventually mandated. That's why we are concerned. Because what the Office of the Superintendent is suggesting in terms of curriculum, I'm going to guarantee you, within Dory's listening audience, in fact, I'll turn to the text line, 98973, okay? Find me the person who is in favor of kids kindergarten through fourth grade being taught that it feels really good to touch your genitalia. Just find me the people who say that feels good. It's pleasurable. Find me the parents, 98973, or the teachers at 98973, who say, yeah, we should have graphic novels that depict sex acts like oral sex and anal sex, and this should be handed out in schools. And this should be taught in schools. And that we should teach kids that if you can't afford a sex toy, here's how to use a vegetable. These are all legitimately things in the curricula that is being pushed. Some of this stuff is being used. We shared with you earlier a story out of Spokane, KXLY, is a story about a school called Shaw Middle School. That's, here's the story as it exists now. There are these so-called games that the kids are playing there. One of them is called Molest Me Monday. And girls are being subjected to what amounts to effectively sexual assault. And apparently, according to KXLY and some of the parents, the teachers, the school district has known about this. Now, here's the part we're digging into. Okay, they knew about it. They didn't stop it. I should finish that thought. They knew this was happening, apparently didn't stop it. Here's what we're trying to confirm. I've had parents tell me that school is using the comprehensive sex education that is being considered for the state, that Chris Rechtal apparently would like to see shoved into your school, forced into your school, inserted into your school. Okay? We're trying to confirm that with a spokesperson from Shaw Middle School as to whether that's the case. Subsequent to that bit of news, this morning I received a call from a woman who's an activist who works with parents and kids. She has multiple kids who has said that since the comprehensive sex education stuff began being taught in their schools, it is all the kids talk about all day. And wouldn't you, if you were in middle school and you had been shown what sex toys look like and taught that if you can't afford one, go use a vegetable, as long as you wrap it in a condom. And listen, I hate putting this in your ears. I apologize with my entire soul for putting this in your ears, but you have to know. You have to know what's being considered. So if you were in middle school and you were shown pictures like that or pictures of sex acts and told that this is okay to do, wouldn't you be talking about it all day? And these kids are being subjected to the same sorts of behaviors, apparently, that went on at Shaw Middle School, the Molest Me Monday type behaviors. These kids say this has happened since the comprehensive sex education went in place. And in my judgment, this sex education, the curriculum cannot avoid sexualizing kids. I think it's designed to do that. Out of California, a mother posted something on YouTube to us, Washington State parents, because in California, this stuff is well ahead of where we're ever be at. Well, may ever be at. We're going to just go to this real quick. I guess we'll do it next segment. I got music in my ear. She's warning us to stay far away from this. We'll get to this next hour. I want you to hear this woman from California warning people here to stay away from comprehensive sex education. We'll get to that in the big lead. We'll come back. Nicole Jennings joins us. She's a reporter with Kyle Radio. Sex offenders being housed in neighborhoods. There's legislation that could stop that. And she'll tell us about it next on the Dory Monson Show. Todd Herman filling in. Joining me now is Nicole Jennings. She's been a talk show contributor to Dory's show. Nicole Jennings is also now a Kyle Radio reporter. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
It's kind of a big deal. So you've been tracking this placement of dangerous sex offenders into these residential neighborhoods, sometimes with little to no supervision. Let's get people started with a review of what you found, some people you talked to. But I guess there's some changes underway because people are maybe getting their heads about them in this regard.
Yeah. So if you recall, I talked about this on a few of the shows last summer and then again about a year ago, the first time. A house went in a residential area of Kitsap County. Four level three sex offenders were moved there. So level three being the worst. They are a danger to society. They were actually civilly committed on McNeil Island, the secure commitment center. And then they're released in a program called a less restrictive alternative. They're conditionally released, you know, provided that they don't reoffend. And at that time, they were moved to this house run by a private company that was contracted with the Department of Social and Health Services. And, you know, the neighbors were, well, they still are. The house is still there. And the neighbors are very worried because some of them have children. You know, there's a school bus stop 150 feet from the house. So kind of the criticism around this is that the state really didn't do its homework when deciding where to put that house because there are all of these potential risks around it. And so that issue
some of
has,
the risks. Yeah, some of the risks included these guys having like being out in the backyard, as I recall, just it looked like they had no supervision at all from time to time. Is that the case? Is that what was concerning the neighbors?
Well, they were supposed to have 24/7 supervision. But of course, you know, things can always go wrong. And there were, you know, right. It was reported that they were watching out the windows, watching the kids get off the school bus. I mean, obviously, they're allowed to be in the house looking out the windows, but that's kind of that gray area. And so they had to put in these black shades over the windows kind of. So it was sort of an experiment. They called it sort of the petri dish in Kitsap County, and that was exactly what they didn't want their neighborhood to turn into. And so that that has inspired a new bill in the legislature because this concerned citizen group, Washington State for Public Safety, began working with their local legislators and, you know, really trying to affect change around this topic. And so what this new bill does, it has four sponsors. It's a bipartisan bill, which is great. Senator Steve O'Bann, a Republican, has signed on to it, as well as Senator Christine Rolfes, a Democrat. And I talked to both of them about it as well. It basically strengthens the regulations around sexually violent predators. It's the name for the level three sex offenders sent to McNeil Island. It strengthens the regulations around these predators at the time that they are released. So, yes, you're allowed to be released. You're allowed to have your constitutional rights to, you know, try and rehabilitate, try and change your life, transition back into the community. But there are going to be some really tight precautions around where you're allowed to live and how that transition is allowed to look. And it just closes a lot of loopholes that, as we found with this Kitsap case, are currently in the system.
Yeah. Oh, no, I love that. And I mean, so look, I believe in redemption. People need to be able to be redeemed. But the sex offenders at this level, their recidivism rate is so incredibly high. Because I think a lot of them have a mental illness and are deeply mentally ill. So I don't know that they can be fully redeemed. And so I think they're just going to have to be constantly watched. At least this is a start for this. And I know you talked to some of the people involved in this as well, correct?
Yes. Yes. And here's, Senator Christine Rolfes from Bainbridge Island, and she's talking about exactly what you just said.
This category of offender is deemed likely to reoffend, but they do have civil liberties. They do have their rights. So the state has compromised to some extent by saying these people can live in the community. They don't have to stay locked up on McNeil Island, but there are safety elements put in place, you know, 24-hour supervision, security cameras, GPS.
Right. So there are kind of three main parts to this bill that would change the way things currently are. So for one, it would change who's allowed to be released at all. If you're a sexually violent predator trying to make a case for yourself, you know, going before the court saying, hey, I would like to have my freedom. The court, you have to prove to the court that you have made enough progress that you are able to be trusted out in society again, or at least, you know, in this limited version of society. I was told that in the past, you know, the therapists who work with them, the treatment providers, had told a court, you know, I don't really approve of this. I don't think this person is ready. And they had still been approved regardless of that. So the new system makes it so that a court has to decide that you're ready and they have to be able to show ample proof that they have made enough progress. It also changes the notification system. So Senator Rolfes has said that
the whole citing process has been a mess in my county and Kitsap County in terms of mixed information from state agencies and a real concern that the one home that has been placed is in a residential neighborhood where people live. The community wasn't notified ahead of time, and they're all concerned about their public safety.
So the new notification process would make sure that if one of these serious sex offenders, sexually violent predators, is moving into your neighborhood, you are going to know about it. It requires more information to be made available to the public, such as more about their criminal history, so you kind of know what to look out for. Is this person a kidnapping risk? Do they have a thing for 5-year-old girls, whatever, you know, so you have that information, you have the context of why they were locked away, what you might need to watch out for. Also requires a community meeting to be held before they move in. And this is the local sheriff's office would be the ones coordinating this information going out, coordinating the meetings. So just a greater information, greater knowledge available to the public.
Good. Nicole Jennings is with us. She's a reporter at Kyle Radio, also a talk show contributor to the Dory Monson Show. I'm sure you've heard her tracking some legislation. I think you got help get this done. I think your focus on this story probably helped move the needle on this. And then there's one more aspect to it you wanted to discuss.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, probably the biggest aspect is that they're no longer just allowed to move into a kind of quote unquote secure house. They have to move into what's called a secure community transition facility, which is in the RCW's. Has very specific regulations that have to be adhered to. And that was kind of the main complaint with this last year, you might recall, is that there are only 2 secure community transition facilities in the state right now. And people are saying, we need more of them. We need to call these things what they are. They act like secure community transition facilities, but they don't have to adhere to all of these specific demands like a real SCTF would do. So now these people will have to move into these facilities. More of them will have to be created. And they just have, you know, all these things like alarms on the doors when you go through a door, cameras, GPS around their ankles, GPS monitors, 24/7 staff. That's not just they're not just there to babysit them, but staff who are specifically trained in sex offender treatment. That is their area of expertise. In the past, I was told the staff who were there were more there to help them learn to do adult tasks like cook dinner. You know, not necessarily sex offender experts. And then it would also stop them from being moved to adult family homes. And adult family homes are homes that are for the most vulnerable adults who have trouble taking care of themselves. So the elderly, adults living with disabilities, perhaps such as Down syndrome or autism or something, where they need some extra help taking care of themselves. And if you can imagine the most violent people in society being put in with the most vulnerable, That's a terrifying thought. So that would be prohibited from happening
anymore. Right. Listen, congratulations on this. This is, your job as a reporter, obviously, who, what, where, when, why, facts, dispassionate, no bias. But there's also that when local news is defunded, when local news is no longer publishing, government gets away with stuff. And that's just the spending goes up. The corruption goes up. It all increases. But media has this ability to shine the light on this. I'm really thankful that you undertook this story. And I do think that that the listeners to Dory's show have helped move the needle on this. Nicole Jennings has joined us. She is a talk show contributor and now a reporter at Kyle Radio. I'm sure there's a story up on MyNorthwest.com. So check that out. We'll put it on Dory's social pages, and I'll tweet it from @ToddyHerman. Appreciate you coming on, Nicole. Thanks very much.
Thanks very much for your time.
Nicole Jennings, a reporter for Kyle Radio, a contributor to Dory's show. Coming up on the Dory Monson Show, the big lead. You know that law that they want to pass that all cars in Washington State are going to be electric by 2030? Funny thing, they're not that great for the environment. We'll give you the details next on the big lead.